Rams are back where they belong, where it all began in 1946. The last 20 years have been a bad dream. Now, it's time for the Ramble On Podcast. Here are your hosts, Steve Mason and Ryan Abraham.
Ramble On! Welcome to the Ramble On Podcast. I'm your co-host, Ryan Abraham, along with Steve Mason from ESPN Radio here in Los Angeles, talking all about the Los Angeles Rams. We've got a really special show in our second episode, Steve. We're rolling this thing right along.
Yes, we are. We're getting right to the football. You know, we talked about, hey, we're here. We've got a team. We've got a stadium on the way. We have maybe a Super Bowl coming up. But but it's time to start digging into exactly the team we're going to see on the field at the Coliseum this fall.
And we haven't seen this team here in L.A. for, what, 21 years? So we wanted to talk to some of the experts from back where they used to be, the St. Louis Rams. So we got Nick Wagner joining us on the podcast at N Wagner, W-A-G-O-N-E-R on Twitter. He's an ESPN NFL Nation reporter for the St. Louis Rams, now the Los Angeles Rams. You can also find him on 101 ESPN Radio in St. Louis. He's a proud Mizzou grad. Nick, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good. I didn't know we were so early into the podcast in terms of the second episode. I hope that I don't scare away any of your listeners here just in episode two. So,
no, I think you're going to make it through episode two, Nick. You made it through our show. You made it through the Mason and Ireland show once, and I think I gave you a bunch of grief, didn't I?
I don't remember. If it was, I'm sure it was good natured, because if it wasn't, I would certainly remember it more. That's for sure.
Right. You know, first of all, you're from Missouri. You grew up in that part of the world. What's it like back there now for you to see this team moving from Missouri to Los Angeles?
Yeah, I'm actually from Central Illinois, but I've lived down here obviously for a while. Covered the Rams for 12 years, and as you guys would expect, you guys have lived it, being out in Los Angeles. It's never easy when you lose a team. And, you know, there's a lot of people around here that are upset. And of course they hold everything against Rams owner Stan Kroenke and then chief operating officer Kevin Demoff. And they're angry and they're bitter. I think there's a lot of people who have kind of moved on at this point. There's people who haven't quite moved on. I think now that the football season is over, you'll see people start to turn the page a little bit. We're getting close to pitchers and catchers, which around here, baseball, of course, is a huge deal. And so they'll start looking towards that. And then I'm sure we'll get another round of anger when we get into training camp and next season starts, you know, coming up on us. But at least for right now, I think it's starting to dissipate a little bit. I think there's people who will always be bitter. And you know what? There are some fans here that are going to stick by the team. People that were that love the Rams so much and that invested so much time and money in the team that they're going to continue to follow them even though they're no longer here.
Hey, Nick, there was an interesting Super Bowl ad that ran, I think, just locally there. Maybe you want to tell people mm-hmm. about it, where it was kind of taking a few shots at Stan Kroenke on his way out.
Yeah, it was just a local lawyer who went on the air. He's been doing ads around here for a long time and went on and did a spiel about how, you know, Stan Kroenke is, you know, just because you have the money to do something doesn't make it right kind of thing. It was just a quick, like you said, a quick local spot here and a little bit of pandering, of course, to the audience. I don't think there's a better way to put it than that. That's kind of what it is. But, you know, he's made the rounds this week in the follow up on the, you know, the radio shows and all that kind of stuff around here. But certainly something that I guess was in maybe easy pickings, I guess, if you're looking for advertising during the Super Bowl. But not anything that's going to register on a bigger scale, that's for sure.
All right. I was driving when I was at the Super Bowl and I was on one of those buses headed away from the stadium. And I overheard a Broncos fan saying, I don't care if Peyton Manning retires or not. I just don't want him to play for us. There have been these rumors and sort of kicked around the Internet that potentially Peyton Manning. I hope this isn't true. But that Peyton Manning might be a one-year stopgap player at quarterback for the Rams. Is there any truth to that?
Well, look, let's start here. I think the Rams are investigating any and all quarterback options that they have for 2016 and beyond, because this is a team that need both a long-term and a short-term solution at that position. You know, they finished last in the league in almost every major passing category last year, and it doesn't matter how good your run game is. If you don't have something to complement it, it's not going to be – your offense isn't going to be much of anything. And really, you can make your run game better by having a good passing game. So they're looking for somebody who can fill both of those roles. Now, in an ideal world, you find somebody who's both the short-term and the long-term option, but they may not be able to do that because of where they pick. If you don't get one of those top two or three quarterbacks, it can be difficult to find that somebody who could come in and play right away and be the future of the franchise. So if you're looking at short-term options, I think Peyton Manning is a name that has come up around there, but I don't think it necessarily means he's come up more than some of the other names that they've kicked around. If a Ryan Fitzpatrick were to come out onto the market and the Jets let him go, I'm sure that's a name they've discussed. And you can go on down the list because they know that they need to get better at the position. So I think there's truth to it in the sense that they're keeping their options open. They're making sure they're aware of it. And I think they know, hey, Peyton Manning certainly would move the needle, in Los Angeles, of course. But I also don't think that this is necessarily something that's so real that it's imminent or something that even they've really discussed further than maybe let's just be ready in case he does become available or he does decide he wants to play another year.
Hey, Nick, for the L.A. Rams fans, excuse me, the new ones, my voice is going here, the new L.A. Rams fans that you don't really know as much about this team, you know about the quarterback issues, not really sure which direction they're going. But talk about Todd Gurley and talk about that young offensive line, because the limited sacks that they've given up, the rushing yardage, everything, it seems like there's a really good nucleus to this offense if you can fill in someone at quarterback at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have some pieces in place that are certainly promising, and Gurley is at the head of that list. What he was able to accomplish this year was amazing for a number of reasons. First of all, just coming back off of the injury to be able to do what he did and to do it so quickly. He missed the first two games. He played in the third game, but it was really kind of just getting his feet wet. But from there, he had that run where he had the most rushing yards by a running back in his first four games in the modern era of the NFL, which is pretty amazing in its own right. Of course, he went on to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. And an ACL is one of those things that you get another year removed from it, you're only going to be better. They say that your knee is much stronger in the second year after the recovery from that. So I expect him to just continue to get better. He's going to be able to do some things that he wasn't able to do last year. I think he'll be able to go a full year without wearing that knee brace that he had on at the beginning of the year and then actually put back on towards the end of the year. So the future for him, certainly promising. The offensive line, I caution a little bit on some of the optimism there. They got better as the season went on. I think the sack numbers were a little bit misleading. The offense was one that they were really getting the ball out as quickly as possible, trying to avoid getting hit, avoid giving up sacks. But the quarterbacks were getting hit a lot, getting pressured a lot. But they do have a young group there, and some of those guys, like I said, managed to get better as the season went on. I still think they could use an upgrade at center, and I think they have to keep an eye on that left tackle. Greg Robinson is a guy who's got a lot of promise, but he's been very raw and hasn't been able to consistently put it all together yet. So I think that those are a couple things you have to watch out for. We just talked about quarterback, and then wide receiver is the other spot where they just haven't had a consistently productive wideout since Torrey Holt. They haven't had a receiver go over 800, let alone 1,000 receiving yards since Torrey Holt back in 2007. Wow. So all that kind of works together. If they can find somebody who can throw it and somebody who can catch it, it would go a long way towards making that offense much better moving forward.
The Rams fired offensive coordinator Frank Cignetti after the season, and now it feels like there's almost a job share. Michael Groh is the offensive coordinator, or he's the passing coordinator, and then Rob Morris is the offensive coordinator. What's the Rams' offensive philosophy moving forward?
This is still a Jeff Fisher team. And at the end of the day, they're moving Rob Boris up to the offensive coordinator role. And yes, Mike Groh is going to be able to do the passing game part of it. But what they want to be is a run first team. That's who they are. That's why they drafted Todd Gurley. That's why they spent five picks on kind of bigger, more physical offensive linemen last year, and then spent the number two pick the previous year on Greg Robinson. So they want to run it at you first and foremost. And what they want to do after that is they want to spin that into play action passes and take some shots down the field. And so if they can find a way, the number I always look at, guys, when you talk about an offense like this, is when you look at the passing game, it's not about how many yards they're throwing for in a game. They don't need to throw for 300 yards a game to win that way. What they need is yards per attempt. They need that number to be in that 8 to 9 range, because it's not going to be about the quantity of pass attempts. It's going to be about the quality of them. And so if they have a solid running game that can set some things up in play action where they can get the ball down the field and make some big plays that way and keep defenses honest, keep that eighth defender out of the run box, open some things up that way for Todd Gurley. But at the end of the day, that's still who they are. They want to be that smash mouth team that can run, that can wear you out, run you down, and give Todd Gurley an opportunity to kind of be the focal point.
Okay, so given that, let me, sorry to jump in. So given that, you know, we talked about Peyton Manning as one of the names that's sort of bubbling around. You mentioned Ryan Fitzpatrick. We talked to Les Snead last week on my radio show, and he had very positive things to say about Case Keenum, who finished strong for the Rams. He had good things to say about Sean Mannion, who Ryan and I saw play a lot out here on the West Coast. Talk about the quarterback. He even mentioned Nick Foles, and I know he's under contract. How do you see the quarterback battle of the existing guys kind of playing out this summer?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing here is heck, you guys have seen Mannion play more than I have at this point. You know, he didn't do a whole lot last year. He made a mop-up appearance towards the end of the season, but other than that, he was inactive for 15 out of the 16 games. But I think they like his physical tools, and I think in an ideal world, maybe he was a guy who would be ready to compete for a starting job this year. I don't think that's going to happen. I think their hope is that maybe he can be the number two, or that he can push for that number two job. Case Keenum is the guy that, as of right now, is the guy they are the most comfortable with on the roster. I'm sure you were able to glean that from talking to Les Snead as well. And, you know, he did fine towards the end of the year, but I think Les Snead would be the first person to admit that Keenum's a guy who's a little bit limited. He can do some things in terms of running around, making plays with his feet, kind of extending plays a little bit, and he can throw it. He can chuck it deep as well off of that play action like they want to do. So I think he's the guy that they feel the most comfortable with if they aren't able to find an upgrade. And let's face it, guys, upgrades aren't easy to find at quarterback. There's a lot of teams looking for quarterbacks in this league right now. And so a lot of the names that are out there, you know, I threw out Fitzpatrick, but there's a good chance he won't be available. A guy like Kirk Cousins will get signed. Brock Osweiler, you know, you go down the list, all those guys, they may not be great players, but they're good enough that the other teams that have them want to keep them because they know the alternative is going to be worse. And so I think that's kind of the position that the Rams are in. And the other part of the equation too, guys, is the Rams, if they're going to add a quarterback, they have to delete one. And I wrote about this last week at ESPN.com. I mean, Nick Foles is kind of the obvious choice there. But in terms of the financials of it, it's not a great deal to get rid of him unless they can find a taker for him in a trade. If they were able to do that, it wouldn't be as big a deal. But otherwise, you're looking at a net loss of about $8 million against your salary cap, and you're going into an offseason where you have, you know, a whole bunch of free agents that you need to bring back, including basically your entire secondary. So they have to be really careful about how they manage it. They have to make sure that whoever they bring in is better than the person that they're getting rid of. And I just think that at this point, Nick Foles is the most likely candidate to go. He was a big disappointment. They took a risk. They signed him to a contract extension in the hopes that he would be a bargain this year. It didn't work out that way. He got benched in favor of Keenum. So moving forward right now, I think Keenum's certainly the guy that they're going to look at as their number one guy until or if they can find somebody better.
You talked about the lack of production at the receiver position. Kenny Britt ended up leading the team. I think he had 681 receiving yards. He had a really good yard per catch average. It was like almost 19. But obviously you want to get some more production there. Is that something you think that the front office would try to address early in the draft? Is there free agency? How do you think they're going to try to address the free wide receiver position?
Yeah, I think that's something that they have to do. And, you know, it's something they've been reluctant to do in the past couple of years. You know, if you go back to 2 years ago, the draft, you know, the most productive draft class in terms of wide receivers in league history, just based on the numbers. And it's the one class that the Rams didn't draft a receiver in. And so that's kind of the way that their luck has gone at that position, really since the heyday of you know, the Torrey Holtz and the Isaac Bruces. Over the years, they just, you know, they've kind of been banging their head against the wall because the years before that, they, you know, they drafted both Tavon Austin and Stedman Bailey in 2013. They drafted Brian Quick and Chris Givens in 2012. So they've been putting resources into it, but they haven't been able to get that guy, the number one guy that can consistently create separation and is going to be able to put up, you know, 80 to 90 catches and get you over 1,000 yards. And that's really what they're lacking. But if you look at it, guys, where they pick in this draft, the one thing about this team under Jeff Fisher is they've never been good enough to make the playoffs, but they've never been bad enough really to be in position to draft one of those top quarterbacks, you know, one of the number one or number two type of pick guys. And so maybe they're in a position this year where you're sitting at number 15. It doesn't look like it's now, it's early. We still got the combine coming up in a couple weeks. So maybe this will change, but it doesn't look like there's a wide receiver who is a Sammy Watkins type of guy where he's going to, you know, or last year, Amari Cooper, where they're going to be in the top five of the draft or maybe even the top 10 of the draft. So maybe if they're a little patient, one of those top receivers will fall to them. And if they can't find an upgrade at quarterback, maybe they can get better at wide receiver to help the quarterbacks that they do have in place right now. So I think that's something that we'll certainly be keeping an eye on. Brian Quick is a free agent. Wes Welker is a free agent, probably won't be brought back. Stedman Bailey, who I just mentioned, obviously recovering from two gunshots to the head that he suffered a couple of days before Thanksgiving. So they got a lot to figure out at wide receiver. They may add more than one this offseason. I would tend to think it's more likely to come through the draft because the type of guy we're talking about, that number one receiver, those guys just don't hit the free agent market very often.
You know, they've got the number 15 pick in the draft, Nick, and a lot of the mock drafts, and I went out of my way to actually see this guy play, this North Dakota State quarterback, Carson Wentz, played in the Senior Bowl and had a good week of workouts leading up to it, impressed a lot of people. He was the MVP, I think, in two straight FCS championship games. Do you think he's a serious consideration for the Rams? And do you think they look quarterback in the first round, or do they try to fit a need elsewhere?
You know, I think the way they approach this thing is that they would love it if there was a quarterback who they deemed worthy or of value at the 15th pick. I think they would certainly be interested in that, and it'd be something that they would look really hard at, and especially a guy like Carson Wentz, who, you know, it seems like has maybe already kind of played his way beyond their reach. You know, he may be more of a top 10 pick. And here's the thing, guys, you know this as well as anybody. Quarterback's value at this point in the NFL is so high that if a guy is really a talented guy that they think could be a starter, I'm not just talking about the Rams, I mean any team in the league, they're generally going in the top 10. And, you know, it may be a guy who you have rated, let's say, 18th on your board. And if you pick ninth, but he's a quarterback, he may end up being the ninth player on your board. You know what I mean? That's just kind of the way it works out. And so it would make you wonder, if a guy fell to 15th per se, is he really worth taking there? Is he really a franchise type of quarterback at the 15th pick? Because those types of guys simply don't fall there. Now, I'm not saying you can't get quarterbacks after the first two or three picks. That's obviously happened plenty of times. But just in terms of kind of what's more likely to succeed, those guys don't generally fall to number 15. So that's something that the Rams would have to look at. And, you know, you could look at it as, oh, we're really lucky if say a Carson Wentz fell to 15, but it would also make you wonder why a little bit. You know, I think that's kind of the conundrum that you would run into in that type of a situation. It's just not a good spot to be picking if you're looking for a true franchise quarterback. Doesn't mean you can't get one. It just means it's more of a roll of the dice if you do have one that falls there.
We can switch over to the defensive side, Steve, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, I got one more question wide receiver spot. You know, it doesn't look like on the mock drafts that are floating around out there, it doesn't look like there's a wide receiver that necessarily is going to fall to them at 15 that wouldn't be a reach. So if they don't go quarterback and they don't go wide receiver, do you have a sense for what position they're going to be looking at there?
Well, I think it's so hard to sit here and tell you in February, just because we have to go through free agency. And the big thing for the Rams is they go into this free agency, there's a couple of positions that right now don't look like needs, but after free agency is over, they may be bigger needs than even receiver. You know, it's just, if you look at it, and specifically at cornerback, let's use that as an example, where you have Tremaine Johnson and Janoris Jenkins are both free agents, both played very well last year. Janoris Jenkins is looking for a big payday. Tremaine Johnson played his way into what could be a big payday. And now I think the Rams will be able to keep at least one of those guys, but you never know. If they both hit the open market and the Rams choose not to use the franchise or the transition tag on either one of them, maybe cornerback becomes a big need. The other one I would throw out as a potential there is defensive end, where, you know, William Hayes and Eugene Sims, your two backups, are both free agents, unrestricted free agents. Chris Long is due to count $14.25 million against next year's salary cap. And frankly, they're probably not going to pay him that. So there's a good chance that he won't be back. And so if those things play out, then defensive end becomes a huge need. And that's something that you would have to look at. And clearly the Rams haven't had any qualms about spending high draft picks and capital on defensive linemen in recent years under Jeff Fisher. So I think that's another area that could potentially be something that they look at. So those are kind of things that we have to monitor. It's hard to predict that right here in February, but I think those are things that may play out that could potentially lead to them even going defense in the first round of the draft.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan, let me segue toward defense here. You know, we just came off the Super Bowl. I was there on Sunday at Levi Stadium, and we saw just a monumental performance for the Denver Broncos defense. And that is a team that scored four offensive touchdowns in the entire playoffs. And of course, only one offensive touchdown in the Super Bowl, and they still won it. It makes me wonder if that is not going to, not that defense has not been in fashion. I mean, you got to have a championship defense to win, but we've been so fixated on offense in the modern NFL. I wonder if that performance by the Denver defense and seeing what they were able to do isn't going to cause multiple teams, including the Rams, to focus on really bolstering defense at all costs.
You know, I kind of think that's something that the Rams have been doing anyway in a lot of ways. And I think what you're seeing is, you know, we just sat here and talked about quarterbacks. And, I mean, let's be honest, how many teams in the league really have a true, genuine franchise quarterback? Maybe a handful, maybe a dozen at most in the league have that. So those other teams are trying to find a different way to skin the cat. And I think the Rams are one of them. The Rams have tried to say, hey, we're going to be a run first team. We've got a special running back, and we're going to try to build this defense in a way that allows us to contend. And it's made them competitive, certainly. I think that the difference is you look at a Denver, for example, you're talking about some of these great defenses that have won Super Bowls. Those are historically great defenses, whether it's the Broncos, whether you want to go back to the 2000 Ravens or the Bucks a couple of years after that. Those defenses, when you look at them in the grand scheme of things, are among some of the best defenses that have ever played. And I think the Broncos are going to be remembered that way, especially when you take into account the way they played in the postseason and shut down the Steelers, the Patriots, and then the Panthers in consecutive order. So it's a little bit of a dangerous game to play, but it's also another way to try to do it just if you can't find that quarterback, because it is so hard to identify those guys. So I think that's it's certainly kind of been Jeff Fisher's MO here, has been trying to build that defense up to a position where it can be stout enough that it could potentially carry a team to a championship. But I think that the thing is they just need to get that offense to a spot where it doesn't have to be great. It doesn't even have to be a top 10 or even a top 15 offense. It just needs to be average. They just need to be right around league average, maybe a little bit below that. And then if the defense can elevate itself into that top five type of a group, then maybe you have an opportunity to make a run.
And right now it's a young, aggressive defense, Nick. It seems like it's about top third in most of the statistical categories, led by Aaron Donald. Maybe you want to tell some of the LA Rams fans now about what he brings to the table a second year in the league.
Yeah, he's a guy that he's really easy to like, and he will be for the fans out there in Los Angeles that, I mean, especially the ones that have already been paying attention, I'm sure already love him, but the ones that haven't will fall in love with him easily because he's just one of those guys. He's so humble. He's one of the hardest working guys you've ever seen. Last year, we were talking to Mike Tomlin before the Rams played Pittsburgh in week three. And, you know, Aaron Donald is from the Pittsburgh area, and he spends his off seasons out there. And just a quick story Mike Tomlin told was, you know, he showed up. This was the day after the Super Bowl. He showed up at the training facility, and the Steelers share their training facility with the Pitt Panthers, which is where Aaron Donald, of course, played his college football. It's about 5:36 in the morning. Mike Tomlin gets out of his car. And he looks over, and Aaron Donald's getting out of his car to go in and work out. And this is the day after the Super Bowl when, you know, a lot of guys are on a beach somewhere. That's just the kind of guy that Aaron Donald is. He's truly great, guys. I would very rarely give that out. I very rarely say that about a guy who's only been in the league for 2 years. But barring an injury, this is one of those guys that when you see it, you know it. And he's a Hall of Fame caliber player. Now, he's got a long way to go to get there. But he certainly has the ability to put it all together and be that guy. And this year was really a testament to how good he was, because he was without Robert Quinn for most of the year, without Chris Long for a big chunk of the year. So some of the guys who would take some of the attention away from Aaron Donald, and he was still destructive and dominant in most games. So certainly a guy that's a lot of fun to watch. And heck, he plays defensive tackle. And when you say a defensive tackle is fun to watch, that speaks volumes about what he's doing on the field.
Yeah, I mean, 11 sacks this year. And I've seen, I forget the, one of the ESPN writers ranked the best players in the NFL and actually ranked Aaron Donald as the best player in the National Football League. And of course, the most common guy he's compared to is J.J. Watt. I mean, he's got a chance to be will continue to be, obviously, a huge impact player for this team. It looks like they were able to get good pressure on the quarterback all year long. William Hayes is another guy at defensive end who can get at it.
Yeah, and Hayes is an unrestricted free agent, but a guy that they really love. He and Jeff Fisher go way back. Fisher was the guy that drafted William Hayes when he came out, when he was still at Tennessee, and then he brought him along. And Hayes actually is a guy that I think you guys would learn to really like if he is around, if they do re-sign him, because he's quite a character, kind of the resident prankster in that locker room, but a guy who can play when it comes to Sunday. He doesn't get a lot of credit, but very strong against the run, solid as a pass rusher as well. And if nothing else, I think he's probably better suited to be the, you know, kind of your third defensive end, the guy that you can bring in, keep him fresh in the rotation, maybe play him 25 to 30 snaps a game. But even, you know, the last couple of years when Chris Long has been hurt, he's been able to step in as the starter and have some success that way, playing even more snaps. So I think ideally they'd like to find a way to make sure that, you know, that he doesn't have to be the starter, that he can kind of be in a rotation. But either way, a key guy and a guy that I think they would like to bring back in 2016.
Hey, Nick, lay out for us the guys that are unrestricted free agents, the guys that can up and leave, and that they'll focus on re-signing or they're prepared to let sail.
Yeah, there's a number of them. It's about a dozen, actually, and I'll try to just at least get the guys who are kind of the key components. You know, both starting cornerbacks, Tremaine Johnson and Janoris Jenkins, free safety Rodney McLeod, and then you've got the safety/linebacker hybrid Mark Barron, who, if you guys – no, he stepped in for Alec Ogletree after he got hurt this year and played weak side linebacker and did a really good job. Those four guys are huge components of the defense, all four starters that'll be unrestricted. William Hayes and Eugene Sims, both defensive ends, also be unrestricted free agents. And then flipping to the other side of the ball, some of the key names there. Tim Barnes, your starting center, is an unrestricted free agent. I think the Rams would probably like to upgrade there, but he's a solid guy in case they can't find something a little bit better that they may have some interest in bringing back. Corey Harkey, who's kind of a fullback tight end hybrid, has played a lot over the years, and it's kind of one of the emotional leaders, a guy that's really highly thought of in the locker room. You guys probably remember him from his days at UCLA. He's an unrestricted free agent who it'll be interesting to see if they bring him back. I think it'll be a little bit telling about the direction of the offense, whether he comes back or not. And then Brian Quick, Wes Welker, both wide receivers. And I don't think I'm missing any. I'm sure I'm missing a couple of names, but I don't think I'm missing anybody who is of major consequence in terms of the overall team.
Nick, do you think the LA factor weighs in at all on free agency, that it could be, you know, it could be a detriment because of the cost of living and stuff like that, but also a lot of players might want to live there. Any factor of moving the team to LA being a free agency implications?
You know, I've talked to some agents for some of the guys that we just mentioned, and my impression is that it can kind of work both ways. I think you're going to see the younger, single type of guys who are very interested in Los Angeles, certainly interested in the climate and the lifestyle that it would bring along, but also taking into account that, hey, you know, these guys, for example, Janoris Jenkins was a guy that the Rams wanted to get signed before the end of the year. But, you know, as an agent, you sit there and you say, well, the value of this deal may not be as much as it would be if they do move to Los Angeles. So maybe let's wait and see how it goes. I think that maybe played into it. But ultimately, guys, I think it's just like anything where it's going to come down to money. And if as long as the money offer is there, then they're going to have their chance to get, you know, the guys that they want to get. Maybe at best, I think the way I look at it is it could be a tiebreaker. You know, if you have an offer from Buffalo and you have an offer from Los Angeles, for example, and the money is about the same, or you know, the money would work out to being about the same, even when you factor in taxes and things like that, then I think maybe that would tip the scales towards Los Angeles. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe you hear a couple of guys say, yeah, I'm really interested in living in Los Angeles, and who wouldn't be, rightfully so. And there's a passionate fan base there that's really excited about having their team back. And so I think there's something to be said for that. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But my opinion is that money's always going to come first in these types of situations. And then maybe you look at your lifestyle and where you're actually living as kind of a tiebreaker.
You know, Les Snead, again, who we talked to last week on the show, is kind of a new school general manager. I was reading, I think it was a Wall Street Journal piece about the way he and Jeff Fisher have gone about studying millennials and the best way to connect to younger players. And I always joke around with my radio partner, John Ireland. He says nothing ever gets accomplished in a big meeting. And that's what jumped out at me, is that they try not to have meetings longer than 15 minutes. Kind of describe the philosophy and kind of what Les Snead and Jeff Fisher are getting at with this millennial thing.
Yeah, you know, they've kind of, I've seen just in the 4 years that they were here, kind of seen them alter their approach a little bit in that regard. And remember, guys, this is a team that pretty much every year since they've been here, and they, I mean, Jeff Fisher and Les Snead in 2012, they've been the youngest team in the league. Or number two. I don't think any worse than number two in any of their 4 years in terms of the youth on their roster. So I think they had to really kind of take a look at, are we really getting through to our guys? And so everything that they do now has a little bit more pace to it and a little more energy. Like you said, well, shorter meetings, trying to keep them moving, keep them focused on the task at hand, and then switching up what the task is so that they have something new to focus on and don't get tired of it. Even something as simple, guys, as this year was the first year that they played music at practice, during practice. And I know other teams were already doing that, but that was just something that they added this year to kind of try to keep guys engaged, keep their energy up for participating in practice. I mean, heck, on Friday afternoons, it looked like a dance party sometimes out there. I'm not kidding. They had at the end of practice, they would have a drill on Friday, the end of Friday practice, where it was, you know, usually you get the ones versus twos in practice. Well, they have the ones go against the ones in a goal line drill for three plays, and then they would declare a winner on whichever side got the better of the other side out of the best of three plays. And it was just something that you could tell the players enjoyed because it kind of kept them in it for the whole practice, knowing that little drill was going to come at the end of it. So that's something that they I think it was a smart move on their part to try to make sure that they're getting through to their team, especially given how young they've been, you know, throughout their time here. And I think they're going to be very young again next year, unless, of course, they add Peyton Manning. That's going to bring the average age up a little bit. But otherwise, I expect them to be very young again next year.
Nick, we get a lot of questions with the Rams moving here and what, you know, doing a podcast. Steve, I'm sure you get a lot too. All the questions, where are they going? Where are they going to train? All this kind of stuff. When the Raiders moved to L.A. back in, I think it was 82, they just played their home games at the Coliseum. They kept all the operations back up in Oakland. This is going to be a whole different story. You got to get office space, training facilities, hiring new people, seeing who's going to come over. I mean, there's a lot that has to be done between now and the start of the season. Do you know where they are in this whole process and how far along they've got to figuring out the logistics of trying to move a whole franchise to Los Angeles?
Yeah, I think they're making some progress. They've still, like you said, they've still got a lot to do, and they have to be out of their Rams Park facility in Earth City, Missouri, by the end of March. And so they will make their move right after that and actually go out there. I think the initial plan, at least as of right now, I don't think it's quite finalized yet, but I've reported this really for over a month now, or about a month now, that the Oxnard is going to be kind of their temporary location where you do your off-season program, your OTAs, maybe the draft, those types of things from April to maybe early July, that's kind of where they'll set up shop. And then, of course, the Cowboys will come into Oxnard. That is their training camp site, and take over, and the Rams will move out. I think they're still looking at some things in terms of training camp. I know they've looked a lot in Orange County. UC Irvine is something that I've heard that name come up multiple times. I could see that potentially working out. And then I would think after training camp, I think the areas that they're looking at for their kind of their temporary training facility is back up north, but south of Oxnard. So into the valley there. And you guys can correct me if I'm wrong on my geography here. I may be messing this up. I don't know the area as well, but in the valley there, talking about places like Calabasas, Thousand Oaks, Agora Hills, Westlake Village, even as far in as Burbank. But those are kind of the areas that I think that particular part of the LA area is where they're looking to have their temporary facility. And then I think what they'd like to do is when they build their permanent training facility, have it be at least relatively close to where their temporary site is, just on the basis of, hey, let's not put our players in a position where they buy houses maybe in those areas and then they have to move again somewhere, or they find themselves in just the death of traffic because they decided to have their facility somewhere else. So I think those are all things that are still kind of in discussion that they're still kicking around. And I think they'll probably get I would think that the Oxnard thing would get solidified here pretty soon. I would think training camp soon after that, but they, like you said, they definitely still have a long way to go in this whole thing. And I know just this week that they're really starting to finalize two, making official offers to the employees that they want to take with them to Los Angeles. So there's a whole lot going on. They've got a lot to do. And oh, by the way, the combine and free agency is right around the corner as well.
Yeah, combine is February 26th through the 29th, so coming really fast. Just to circle what you said, so the OTAs you think will be in Oxnard. where
I think OTA is in the off-season program. Yep.
And the training camp will be not set, but somewhere in Orange County. And then the temporary practice facility somewhere, Calabasas, Westlake Village, again, north, but not as far north as Oxnard.
Yeah, I think that's probably the safest way to look at it. I think that's what they're kind of honing in on right now, of course, subject to change until they finalize that. But I think the Oxnard one is the safest bet. I think UC Irvine is probably a fairly good bet for a training camp, and then we'll see what happens, you know, in terms of actually finding a spot for their temporary facility for the season.
Okay, I got one other thing, a rumor to throw at you. There was a rumor, I think it was Adam Schefter on Super Bowl Sunday, tweeted something about the Eagles perhaps interested in reacquiring Nick Foles. He said Nick Foles is the least likely quarterback to stay with the Rams. Is there any truth to that rumor?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the case, that he's the least likely to stay with the Rams. That's, you know, I kind of detailed the reasons earlier. You're not going to give up on Sean Mannion in his second year. Case Keenum is the guy that they feel most comfortable about. So who can we delete that would allow us to upgrade? As far as Philadelphia's interest, it's hard for me to speak to that. I know Adam has that on pretty good authority, and Doug Peterson, the new coach in Philadelphia, was in Philadelphia when they drafted Nick Foles. So there is a relationship there. He may have interest in that. I don't know how much interest the actual football decision makers there have, the Howie Rosemans of the world. I don't know what they think of Nick Foles, but I do think that if the Rams are going to find an option who is better than what they have right now, and that's, you know, not asking for a ton, if they do find one, Nick Foles is kind of the obvious guy that you would delete from the picture, even though you would probably have to take a bit of a hit in terms of the salary cap to do it. Now, if they could find a way, if Philadelphia were to offer a draft pick, I think the Rams would be all over it, because it would save them a boatload of money going into next year versus having to cut him if that were to be the case.
Nick Wagoner at N Wagoner on Twitter. Follow him on Twitter. He's a great follow. ESPN NFL Nation reporter. Breaking it all down, the new Los Angeles Rams. Nick, are you going to continue to cover the Rams now that they're in L.A. too?
We're still working out some details, but until further notice, we'll be doing it as best we can.
All right, cool, man. Well, we'll continue to follow and hopefully have you on again. Great information, a lot of great stuff, and hope to see you out here in Los Angeles, man.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Yeah, Nick, you got to choose between Venice Beach, where Mace is up there, and I'm down at Hermosa Beach. See which one you like better.
There's no bad choice, by the way, between those two.
It doesn't seem like it. And as I look out my window with it snowing and it's 12 degrees here right now, that doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, I think it's 80 here today. See,
yeah, it's 85. Rub it in.
Rub it in.
85.
Yeah. Wow. Sorry about that, Nick. Yeah. All right, Nick. Well, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks,
guys.
That's going to wrap up our second episode of the Ramble On podcast. That's Steve Mason.
I think it's our best episode yet.
Yeah, by far, by the best one. Steve Mason, I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks for tuning in. Check us out next time.